This is Ozarks at Large. The Academy Award-nominated film Hidden Figures, based on the book of the same name by Margot Lee Shetterly, has connected with audiences. In 8 weeks, the film has collected more than $130 million domestically. The true story of the pivotal roles African-American women played in the development of the United States space program enlightened many of us to brilliant people far too many of us didn't know about. This month, February, includes the annual observance of Black History Month, and while many civil rights figures receive attention, understandably, there are far more hidden figures when it comes to the roles of African Americans and the roles they've had and continue to have in science in the United States. When the citywide celebration of Black History Month began in Fayetteville, a press conference held to kick it off included remarks by Dr. Paul Adams, associate professor of biochemistry at the University of Arkansas. During that press conference, he discussed many of the scientists we may not have heard about. And last week, he accepted our invitation to come to the Carver Center for Public Radio to expand on those remarks.
I do believe that it is important that we do remember and recognize those figures who have helped with the civil rights social action cause. I recently saw a movie that kind of motivated me to really kind of think about some other aspects of the African American experience. I think that has helped to shape our society as we are today. These three women.
Hidden Figures, the movie.
Hidden Figures, yes, sorry. These three women all were mathematicians, and one even went on to become an engineer. Their ability to succeed and to show ingenuity in the face of challenges was just a testament to just their will to want to be successful in their chosen way of life, you know, professionally. And so I began to think about all the other quote-unquote hidden figures that, that I think about on a daily basis, you know, in my career, because I too feel a certain level of responsibility. In 2007, when I was hired as an assistant professor here in the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry at the University of Arkansas, I was the first African American ever to be offered that appointment. And so, with that kind of pressure, I took it upon myself, and I still take it upon myself to try to do the things that are necessary to move forward, so that I won't be the only. You know, and there are several figures. If you can, wouldn't mind if we could talk
Please.
A little bit about them. I mean, we,
Please.
You know, there these you know in the STEM disciplines, we can go all the way back to the times of our first president. We think of Benjamin Banneker, who was an astronomer and a mathematician who lived in the mid to late 1700s, who's actually credited with constructing the United States' first functional clock. We can go on to talk about some other people at the turn of the 20th century. One of the first people to be awarded the Springhorn Medal by the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP, back in the early 1900s was a scientist by the name of Ernest Just. And his story is pretty interesting. He actually received a PhD in experimental embryology. I.e., the study was basically
Thank you.
the study of biological formation and development and early growth of living things. And he did some groundbreaking research that actually went that was focused on something called artificial parthenogenesis. Basically, what that meant is that's like reproduction without fertilization. And he actually wrote some articles that kind of refuted that and was kind of vilified by some of his colleagues. Partially because he didn't look like them.
I was going to say, was it academic vilification,
yeah.
or was it?
But the history shows that it was more so because of the way that he looked, as opposed to what he produced. And he actually was kind of forced to go and do a lot of his research in Europe. He actually moved to Europe, which was not totally uncommon. There are other scientific figures of the African American persuasion who actually studied in Europe. I can think of Percy Julian, who's one of the first people to synthesize medicines that are involved with from synthesizing medicine from plants. he actually, Dr. Julian actually was the focus of a PBS documentary several years ago called The Forgotten Genius. And, you know, Garrett Morgan is another person I think we think of actually who was credited with inventing the first traffic light, something that we do every day, use every day. We came across some names that really talk about not only the African-American experience, but also the female experience.
Right, because in Hidden Figures, they weren't just African-Americans. They were women. And STEM is not necessarily
Yes. And thought of, speaking of that, we have a history tells us that we have Mary Maynard Daly, who actually was the first African-American woman to earn a PhD in chemistry. She earned it in 1947. We have Euphemia Lofton Haynes, who was actually credited with the first African-American woman to obtain a PhD in mathematics in 1943. We have Betty Harris, who's actually known, she did a lot of research related to the chemistry of explosives, and she worked at Los Alamos Research, Los Alamos mm-hmm. Research Laboratory. Shirley Jackson, even today, I can think about her. Dr. Jackson actually serves as the president of the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. However, she actually received her PhD in nuclear physics in the early 1970s, and she actually was the first African-American woman to earn a doctorate at MIT. And so we could go on and on and on about, to discuss the contributions that members of the African-American experience have made to us as our society as a whole. And while I always will honor and respect the notion of us recognizing those figures that helped with the civil rights struggle, I also think that I was glad to have the opportunity and glad to have the opportunity to come and talk with you today to share with you about some other aspects of the African-American experience that has been contributory to our society.
I think a lot of people, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, perhaps did learn about George Washington Carver in mm-hmm. school. He was the one, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, if you go to, in southern Missouri, Diamond, Missouri, there is the monument to him in the park. And as you go through this exhibit, you find out that he had to overcome gross prejudice. He had to walk miles to school. I mean, it's embarrassing. Do you know if many of these other folks had to achieve their PhDs and their inventions and the research in spite of overwhelming prejudice?
Well, I can't speak to factually to all of them. Now, one of the names that comes to my mind is Dr. Vivian Thomas. And Dr. Vivian Thomas is actually, he worked for years with a world-renowned surgeon named Dr. Alfred Blaylock at Johns Hopkins University. And Dr. Blaylock was credited with really developing what we know today as modern cardiothoracic surgery. Of course, this is after the first open heart surgery was performed in the early 1900s by an African-American, Dr. Daniel Hale Williams. Nonetheless, Dr. Blaylock's assistant was a gentleman by the name of Vivian Thomas, who was African-American. And he actually did not even attend college. And in fact, there was a movie made about him recently by HBO. It was called Something the Lord Made. It actually stars I think his name is Mos Def, actually. The person who plays Dr. Thomas. But here's a gentleman who actually had all the skills and all the God-given talent. Actually, he did not go to college till later on in his career, and who was really never given the credit that he deserved at the time for his contributed efforts to what we know today as open heart surgery. Now, of course, now Johns Hopkins, there's a big portrait of Dr. Thomas there, and he was awarded his honorary doctorate degree, and he went on to earn his bachelor's degrees from Morgan College, eventually to come from Morgan State University. But, that's one person I can think of that I actually saw from a factual basis of the struggles that he had in order to maintain his not only his life or his family, but also try to move forward in his career.
Of course,
that's one I can think of.
We know the pioneers that we've talked about civil rights, and we know the pioneers in the sporting world, Jackie Robinson, Muhammad Ali. And these are not household names that we've talked about in the STEM disciplines. But if you strip away, I mean, we're touching on something that's more societal, We know athletes. We know politicians. We don't know, we don't have many people in the STEM disciplines that are household names, no matter gender or color. And that's probably not right.
It is something that I think people may take for, take for granted, but that they naturally assume that the sciences are, you know, I've heard, oh, this is so hard, you know, and without really ever thinking about that, you know, these disciplines, and when I look at my work as a scientist, it is about the sheer enjoyment of taking the foundations that we learn in high school and in college and really critically thinking to ask new questions. And I just think that sometimes when those questions are not answered or not answered in a timely manner, you know, scientific research can take sometimes not months but years. You know, we live in a society where we like the quick. Mm-hmm. Quick answer.
The bumper sticker. And
sometimes science doesn't work that way. And because of that, sometimes you may need to find that you know, even some of the scientific research that we do know about and some of the people that are considered famous, you know, we don't know the back story of the time it took them to develop the theories and of the beliefs or, you know, the factual evidence that we get so excited about as a society.
You're a relatively young man for a scientist. I'm not going to ask
how
old you are, but I think you appear to me to be relatively young. I'm wondering, as you were progressing in your career, did it ever occur to you that you didn't look like a lot of scientists, or was that ever, did that ever come in? You were just a young, smart guy.
So that's an excellent question. And to answer that, I'd like to just to tell you about a little bit about my experience. So when I was 8 years old, we had to wait. My mother worked two jobs. And so my brother and I would take the city bus from our school to our grandmother's house. My grandmother had in her backyard, she had these little three leaf and four leaf clovers and these little like white weed things, and bees would fly on them. And so what I would do is I actually would take my, 8 years old, I still remember this. Now I would take my grandmother's mason jars that she used to make preserves. She would store them in the back porch. And I would take the mason jars and I would actually go and capture the bees into the jars. And I would get two or three jars. And then I would go to the backyard and I would spray. And at that time, being a child of the 70s, there were no Raid cans. It was called like a flick gun, if you will. You had to kind of pressurize it and then spray. And I would open up one of the mason jars and spray it one time and close it back up. And then the other one I'd spray two times. And then, of course, I'd spray three times and just look and see how long it took the bees to die. Well, you know, as it turns out, my parents eventually said that was my first scientific experiment.
Absolutely,
know,
yeah.
And it led to them getting me my first chemistry set. But all throughout my life coming up, the career that I have now was not discussed. I don't even think it was something that my family and my loved ones may have been even aware of that could be a possibility. But they always encouraged me, you know. And so as I got to college is when I really got my first experience in research. And the person who really inspired me was a teacher who was a woman, and she was Caucasian. And one of the things that I noticed about her immediately was that she cared. And I bring that up because I don't think whether or not we're black, brown, white, man or woman, any of that matters when it comes to really wanting to see someone succeed and to cross paths as you're crossing paths that they've crossed, for them to try to make it a little narrower for you. I think that is the essence of diversity. I also think that's the essence of unity. And these are the people who inspired me and mentored me to follow my dream once I realized that I could become a professional scientist. And they encouraged me, and they still do.
You know, we're having this conversation because I saw you at the kickoff for Fayetteville's observation of African American History Month, and you're here because I saw that. We have this tendency for 28 days a year to talk about great people of color, and then come March 1st, it kind of goes away. Is that a little bit frustrating? I mean, shouldn't we be talking about some of these great folks in history 365 days a year?
I will say to you, yes, but it is not a frustrating experience for me. For me personally, I have just come to learn to really appreciate this time when certain people of other of the African American diaspora, if you will, are honored, for lack of a better word, at this time. And I think that it starts here, and I actually think that we take this time in February to really try to build upon things as it relates to going towards the future, whether it be, we talk about the discipline or what they've done, in terms of helping, our society. Do I think African Americans should be discussed year round? I think every person who has done something to contribute to our society and who is trying to make a difference, all those people should be discussed no matter what, all year round.
Finally, you touched on this earlier in our conversation. You're the first at the University of Arkansas. I don't know if you would use this word, but that by definition makes you a pioneer, a leader. Do you think about that?
Well, I tell you, I'm chuckling now because my 12-year-old daughter says I'm not Black History because I'm not dead. I would be remiss if I did not recognize and understand that the significance of the hire back in 2007. I've never wanted to be referred to as a Black biochemist or an African-American biochemist. I wanted to be referred to as a biochemist who happens to be African-American, which in my opinion attests to my ability to think and critically think through the problems that I work on in my research, as opposed to just focusing on that particular aspect of my existence. I will say that the responsibility that I feel that maybe some of my other colleagues may or may not fully grasp is that I may have been the first, but I don't want to be the last, and I don't want to be the only. So I also want to take this opportunity, as I continue to move forward in my career, hopefully give others coming behind me the chance to have the same kind of success and happiness professionally that I've had here at the University of Arkansas.
And if you see your son, daughter, grandson, grandchild, niece, nephew out there in the backyard playing with the bees, get them the chemistry set.
I'm going to leave them alone.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Dr. Paul Adams is an associate professor of biochemistry at the University of Arkansas. Our conversation took place last week in our studio.